Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be discussing the key themes in markets and a number of UK equities. And to do that, we're kindly joined once more by Alan Green. Alan, thanks for being with us again today.
Morning, John. Good to be back.
Alan, we are looking at markets now, which are showing some form of positivity on the day. We're looking at a FTSE 100 that's currently trading about 1% higher. At the time that we're recording this, we're looking at it just above that 7,200 level. So that does mark quite a sharp turnaround from the lowest levels that we have seen since the beginning of the Russia invasion of Ukraine. And there's actually been a number of interesting developments within markets that are related to the conflict this week. And I feel that's really something that we need to touch on here and look at how this could develop in the markets going forward. So, of course, the biggest theme in markets has been, for the last 3 weeks, the tragedy that's unfolding in Ukraine. But we've just seen in the last week, we've seen the involvement or potential involvement of China. There have obviously been reports that Russia approached China for aid, for military aid. That was quickly refuted by both sides. So we don't know the exact truth behind that. But that caused a huge amount of volatility, Alan, in Chinese equities, which then followed through into European markets. But as we woke up this morning, we did see a very strong rally in Chinese equities overnight. And there's a couple of factors here that I want to explore due to the interlinking nature of what we're seeing at the moment in markets. Of course, there's potential talks of a ceasefire going on. I wouldn't like to make any predictions on how they would go.
No,
but
neither would I.
Yes, I mean, but it does seem that the market has taken a stance. Of course, that traders like to trade, and any sign of positivity in this conflict is resulting in upside in markets. And of course, then we've got this issue of inflation, and there are reports and comments from certain market participants that we've now seen possibly the peak of inflation. This really plays into the oil prices. We've seen a sharp decline from the highest level in oil. So that has suggested to some economists and analysts that we have actually seen the highest levels in oil, and that's obviously probably going to lead through to the highest levels of inflation, and it's going to fall off from here. But in your view, Alan, I wouldn't ask you where you see markets going, but given where we are at this point in time, what would your view be on how to sort of position a portfolio if you've been looking at a number of stocks? Maybe, of course, you've had a sell-off. There's a dip there that could be bought into. If we start to see a little bit more positivity, is that a buying signal, or do you think this is a real volatile sort of period in markets? And, yes, we're up, but very likely that we're going to see more downside in the near future.
That's a very good question, a very complex question. I mean, of course, we've got this ongoing issue with inflation being driven by the high energy prices and high oil prices. If those have peaked, and if these talks are going to lead to something, then obviously we will see the oil price decline. I'm not so sure about energy prices, because of course that will require a resolution. But I think the Prime Minister and certainly the EU have stated their intention to wean themselves off Russian energy exports, oil and gas, to become less reliant. And I think there are many ways they can do that, of course, through clean energy. North Sea oil is back on the agenda, all of those. So in that regard, I mean, oil stocks, may come back a bit from those highs, but we need to find this alternative energy. So, it would be a good time perhaps to look at companies engaged in exploring for oil you know, and whether that's through the controversial ideas of fracking or just the conventional exploration in the North Sea, in the Gulf, you know, companies that maybe have assets around the world, in you know, in the Western world, in stable regimes that you know, won't suddenly try and trigger or won't suddenly invade a neighbor like Russia did. Those are the sort of stocks that I'd be looking at. But also, I think you know, maybe financials could be back on the agenda if there really is a resolution in sight. Then, of course, the some of the restrictions placed on Russia may be lifted, but I imagine, given what Putin's done, those sanctions won't be lifted until Putin goes or another leader is installed in Russia. And also, you know, in regard to China as well, China has, prior to the Winter Olympics, of course, there was that meeting showing Putin and Xi Jinping shaking hands and getting it together and, you know, forming a limitless partnership. But I believe China has been very shocked by the way events have escalated. But probably more than anything, they've been shocked at the cohesion of the West and NATO. And of course, you know, it's really, I think the EU and NATO have come of age in this united response. So it may well deter China from any ambitions it has with Taiwan and so on. And indeed, China may well take the decision, well, actually, you know, the West is far stronger than we imagine. They're far more united than we imagine. So we'll throw our hat into the ring with the West rather than with Russia. So, of course, there are all these factors that are going to play out. But certainly, if a ceasefire is on the table, then that's great. But regardless of that, you know, we are searching for alternative energy supplies. And to my mind, looking at companies that are engaged in that exploration effort would be the best way to perhaps change and add to your portfolio.
Indeed, indeed. So, you know, of those three themes that I outlined at the beginning, you know, potential ceasefire, that's a positive for markets this morning. The potential peak in inflation, of course, that's a positive, and that's got a direct consequence on interest rates and what that means going forward. And of course, China and what's happening over there with the involvement with Russia. We see a ceasefire that goes away pretty quickly, and that story becomes dead to some extent. So, you know, of those three key themes, the one that I feel is going to persist going forward is, of course, inflation. You know, before we had the Ukraine crisis, inflation was an issue, and you know, with the invasion of Ukraine and obviously subsequent sanctions, that's just made that situation a hell of a lot worse. But there is going to need to be a reaction by central banks in the form of interest rates. We have the Federal Reserve later on this evening set to increase rates. We then have tomorrow the Bank of England set to increase rates for their third meeting in a row. So you touched on their financials, Alan. This is a sector that we're going to just drill into now in one particular company. They, particularly the banks, will benefit from higher interest rates. You know, no doubt about it that the net interest margins of banks do improve with higher interest rates. And, you know, given that a lot of these banks now have started to reverse the provisions from COVID, that's going to be a benefit to their profitability as well. So they're set for a good year. So let's just delve now into one bank, Alan, and one that I know that we've discussed on the podcast this year. It's one of your favourite banks. I believe you have a holding in it.
I do.
Barclays, down 12% year to date, you know, trading around that 172 level. We've seen highs at around sort of 217. I mean, is that, you know, those sort of levels there around 217, do you think that's a realistic target to be looking at to get back to those highs within the next 6 months?
Absolutely. Well, firstly, Barclays has a book value of around £3 per share. So it's trading at a discount to that. But then again, quite a few banks are at present. But Barclays has always differentiated itself from the other high street banks through its investment arm. And it has a very successful investment arm that, you know, during the, when it announced full year results back in February, the investment arm really drove the profits, and the income rose to just under 22 billion for the year. Net interest income fell to 8%, but also, of course, we've had all the problems with the banks over the years with the credit impairment charges, the dark pools, a whole load of issues, and Barclays have really tightened their act up in that regard. They said their medium term targets are unchanged, including return on equity, tangible equity of greater than 10%. So, of course, that, you know, going forward, that that indicates they're very confident of growth. That was admittedly before the invasion of Ukraine, and some of the Russian sanctions on Russian banks could well be an issue for Barclays going forward. But I think Barclays has the freedom to manoeuvre far more than the other high street banks with its investment arm, and I think going forward, you know, the investment opportunities that we've been discussing, that the war has created, you know, the shift by economies looking to move away from Russia and source their energy supplies elsewhere, that creates an opportunity, and I'm pretty damn sure that Barclays, the Barclays investment arm, will be right at the forefront of seeking out those companies to invest into. So certainly for that reason, I think the company, or I think Barclays, will continue to deliver strong numbers. The only X factor in that, of course, as I say, is the impact of the Russian financial sanctions on Russia with Barclays. But aside from that, I do see Barclays returning to those highs, particularly, of course, if interest rates continue to rise.
Indeed. That's going to be a main driver, I feel, of banking shares in 2020, as we start to see interest rates increase. This dip that we've seen in banking shares caused by the Ukraine crisis could well be a strong buying opportunity. And one thing I would just point out before we move on, you mentioned there the book value of Barclays. Now, you know, looking back to the financial crisis, banks aren't really valued on earnings, because they've been non-existent for some time due to obviously litigation costs and whatever else. So the market's really pivoted to looking at the book value and giving a gauge of the health of their assets as the best way of valuing banks. And as you mentioned there, the book value of Barclays is about £3. So that equates to a price to book ratio of 0.4, which is particularly low for a bank, yeah. Especially when you're considering that Lloyds and NatWest, very similar business models, of course, as you mentioned there, Barclays has the investment banking side of things, but Lloyds and NatWest both trade on a multiple of 0.6 as opposed to Barclays 0.4 book value. So that does suggest if Barclays are going to move back in line with their peers, and I don't see, you know, any reason why not, there could be substantial upside.
I agree, John, and I think that those are very good metrics that you've highlighted there. But as I say, Barclays has the investment arm that the other retail banks don't. I mean, you can argue the toss on the quality of the service for retail banking, but Barclays is less about that and more about its investment potential. So certainly, in regard to addressing and closing the valuation gap in that book value, I think Barclays offers great potential right now.
Yes, indeed. I mean, that would suggest, you know, if you're just looking purely on book value, there could be a 50% upside in Barclays from this level if it was to move up to trade in line with Lloyds and NatWest purely on the price to book valuation. But of course, there's other factors at play. So certainly that could be one to play for the interest rate cycle, if we're going to see more rate hikes later on this year. And I'm sure this is going to be one that we discuss on the podcast again when we get Barclays' next update.
Yeah.
So do stay tuned for that. So, Alan, now let's move on. So a company that presented on the recent UK Investor Magazine Metals and Mining Conference Sovereign Metals has had a very significant announcement this week, which I feel is due discussion. So they've updated on their Cassia project in Malawi. It's a titanium rutile project, actually the world's largest undeveloped titanium rutile project. Alan, what was the latest installment of news from them?
So Sovereign Metals have taken a significant step forward this week with the titanium rutile project in Malawi, and of course the project covers a huge area. The area itself covers many acres, and the mineral resource estimate provided to date covered just 49 square kilometers of the mineralized envelope. They've now expanded that to 165 square kilometers, and on the back of that, the drilling campaign and the assay samples that have come back will increase both the indicated and inferred categories for the Sovereign Metals Cassia titanium rutile project going forward. And Dr. Julius Stevens, the MD, said the results surprised even them. You know, they encountered the highest titanium rutile grades to date, but bringing the additional territory into the Cassia asset does mean they almost certainly have the single largest titanium rutile deposit in the world. So the mineral resource estimate, the upgraded version, will be out within weeks. But surprising, a very sort of muted reaction to that in the market, which really just highlights the value of this asset all the more. It's trading at about, with a valuation of about 100 million so far, but that's against an initial scoping study valuation for the smaller area last year of $816 million. So if that resource estimate has upgraded, I imagine that the NPV8 number will increase with it and could well pass the billion dollar mark, which would be hugely significant. So you've got an asset that's advanced, has had an awful lot of work undertaken already, with a valuation of over a billion potentially, is still trading at just 100 million. So it's hugely undervalued. And of course, on the UK Investor magazine webinar, we saw Sapan, the corporate communications officer at Sovereign, discuss the investment proposition, the applications for titanium, which are almost limitless, certainly nebulous anyway. And of course, it's used as pigment in paint, it's used in aerospace, it has an application for welding and clean tech energy, all the rest of it. And of course, the company announced a few weeks ago it had signed a memorandum of understanding with Hascor, which is a global welding suppliers company or corporation. So they will have an offtake agreement in place there already, which is again significant in terms of revenue going forward. But certainly, I think the update on Monday is hugely significant. Caught the attention of the financial press as well. There was an article in the Mail. So this company's really starting to gather traction now and make waves. And I would fully expect that the valuation gap between the NPV8 number and the current market capitalization will be closed as the year progresses.
Indeed. And it is a stock that we've been looking at here in some detail. And you did mention there the valuation. And just as we made the comparison with Barclays earlier on with Lloyds and NatWest, you know, particularly unique businesses in terms of the place they have in the market and what they're doing, with what Sovereign Metals has, is not entirely unique, but you know, there's not many players in that market in a similar way that there's not many major UK banks. So when we've compared Sovereign Metals to some of their closest peers that are operating natural rutile resources, of course these are fairly rare resources on a global basis. as you mentioned there, Alan, there's one company in particular, Luca Resources, listed in Australia. If you make comparisons on the projections of the earnings of Sovereign Metals to Luca Resources, again, a huge disparity there in the valuation of Sovereign Metals. Yep. In it being significantly undervalued when you compare it to its peers. So certainly one that is worth investors taking a look at there. And, you know, as you mentioned there, you know, Sapan and Sovereign Metals have been quite forthcoming with, you know, a number of updates. And from what I understand, and as you mentioned there, there are going to be a number of significant updates coming in the first half of 2022, so do keep an eye out for them. So, Alan, now we're going to finish off with a company which, in my view, is the perfect solution to some of the issues that we've seen arise from the Ukrainian situation in terms of the cost of fuel having a significant impact on household spending. And it's a company, Smart Metering Systems, very interesting business, operating, you know, solar power, renewable power, energy efficiency. I understand they've had an update very recently, Alan. What does that look like?
Well, they have. They announced their full year results yesterday, John. And this is, you know, this is significant on a number of levels. Firstly, you know, to use the gold mining analogy, the companies that make the often make the money during the gold rush are the people handing out the picks and the shovels. So in that sense, Smart Metering Systems, as the name implies, is the company that provides the smart metering boxes for households up and down the country. And they have steadily progressed. It's a real cash cow of a business, and they have steadily progressed the business. It was under the leadership of Alan Foy, the CEO, who announced his retirement. In fact, he was at the helm for 20 years, so he's stepping down to make way for the Chief Operating Officer, Tim Mortlock, who also has been with the company for that period of time. He's stepping up to the Chief Executive role. So that's a very good sign. You know, that's effective management at work, and obviously the legacy of that is Alan Foy has been working with Tim Mortlock for many years, and Tim has just stepped up now to take that on. So, over the past few years, smart metering has evolved its offering in that it's gone into the grid battery power market. It's obviously aside from the smart metering boxes, it has developed a national and European wide charging infrastructure. And it provides services to energy management, and also data collection to the commercial sector. But it's also developing a pipeline of assets in what we'll call the care pipeline, which is which includes the, of course, the electric vehicle recharging stations up and down the UK. It has it announced with the full year results that it had grown its grid scale battery offering, so this temporary power offering to the grid, of 620 megawatts, up from 267 megawatts in the previous financial year. And there's another 600 megawatts of deals already on the way. So this is a fast growing element to the business. The company has added 900,000 meters, so nearly a million meters, to its existing asset base in 2021, also grown its electric vehicle points, a great set of results. The company grew revenues during the year, full year revenues of just under 86 million, up from 77 million previously. EBITDA up to 52 million from 49 million previously. Announced an equity raise to purchase more assets in the meter area in quarter four last year, 175 million raised, and also full year profits came in ahead of expectations at 18.5 million, up from 15 million previously. And of course, after that raise, it's got net cash of 118 million versus 40 million previously. But certainly the new CEO, Tim Mortlock, has come in and said the company's seen a very strong start to 2022 with growth in all areas. And of course, with their ESG credentials as well, the company are making progress and are on schedule to hit net zero by 2030, which will, of course, be a key factor for a number of investors. Shares are currently trading at 716 pence, year low of 670p, year high of just over £10 or 1038p. But also with this company, you get a dividend paid as well. So the dividend yield is currently 4.6%. So, you know, when a share's at or towards lower levels for the year, it's often worth considering picking them up, particularly, obviously, we've just had the full year results. So often, you know, in the markets, we see the saying, it's better to travel than to arrive. Of course, there was a build up in the share price to the results coming out. They're now out and there may be a drift in the share price. So there may be an opportunity if it drifts closer to year lows to pick the stock up. But certainly, regardless of what energy prices are, this company basically has the assets to report the usage. It has the assets now, the megawatt assets with the grid battery offering to supply the grid if there are shortages. And of course, the EV charging stations up and down the country too. So a very strong business model and one that's well proven over the past 20 years, and also a very good management team on board too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of things that jump out at me there, Alan, with this company. It's making acquisitions and winning contracts. You know, that's always good news for a business. Yep. As you mentioned there, at the same time, they're paying quite a substantial dividend as well, which has increased in line with their policy. 10%.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge. Obviously, underlying profit before tax up 20%. And I mean, with shares bouncing around where they are, certainly worth some consideration there. Maybe even for those investors that aren't sort of really looking for you know, exposure just to the solar and renewable energy sector, but you know, purely from a dividend play, certainly one that jumps out there. And we shares around £7 against those year highs of £10. Certainly worth some consideration there, Alan.
Indeed, yes, certainly is. And yeah, that 10% that dividend policy is to increase the dividend by 10% per annum for the next few years. So you know, you could buy now at these levels, and regardless of what the share price does. But I think given the track record of the share price, look at its performance over 5 years, you know, you can buy near a year lows. The share price should hold current values, but you've got that dividend yield to boot. So the main thing is you could even beat inflation.
That's it. And as you mentioned, they've recently done a capital raise. Plenty of cash in the bank, so I don't see any reason that they're going to change or deviate away from that 10% increase in the dividend each year.
Yep.
In the near future. So, Alan, let's now just recap on the equities we discussed today. First of all, was Barclays, of course, has a ticker of BARC. It was then Sovereign Metals, which has a ticker of SVML. And just then was Smart Metering Systems with a ticker of SMS. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
Just as a note to listeners, we do have a number of UK Investor Magazine virtual events, and soon there will be in-person events. So do keep an eye on the event section on the UK Investor Magazine website for the release dates of those events. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.